Hey friends, Peggy Hall back with you from thehealthyamerican.org. A quick introduction to a deep dive interview I have with Dr. Will Tuttle, who wrote this book, Food for Freedom. He is a vegan. He speaks about veganism in this interview. So if that is not something you're interested in, this would not be the interview for you. I am not advocating that path for you one way or another. That should be a conclusion and decision that you draw on your own. So I just wanted to give a few introductory remarks. He has very good information, especially about the psychosis. I think he calls it the metaphysics of masks. And I'm going to break that down for you in a different video another day, because he talks about so many of the issues that I was fighting against as well. So without further ado, please enjoy this deep dive interview with Dr. Will Tuttle. Hey friends, it's Peggy Hall back with you from thehealthyamerican.org. So many of you asked me to bring on Dr. Will Tuttle. Here he is. He's a healthy American. He stands for truth and freedom. He has this amazing book that I shared with you on a previous broadcast called Food for Freedom. I'm riveted. I've been just going through it step by step. So happy to have you, Dr. Will. Welcome.
Thank you, Peggy.
Show.
All right. I'm delighted. I've been a big fan of yours since the early first days, the dark days of March 2020 when things started off. So thank you for all the work you've been doing. It's fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. Isn't it interesting how evil seeks to destroy, but we create solutions. And I have counted among my friends like a thousandfold, right? Now, going through all of this, we've been making connections. We've been increasing our knowledge, our awareness, our education, our solutions. Before we started recording, I was saying how grateful I am for your book, because it's not fear-mongering. It's actually kind of like an encyclopedia of the ills of what's been inflicted upon us by all the, you know, big pharma, big medicine, big banks, big ag, the food industry, but you also give solutions for our healing. So before we get into it, I just want to do a quick introduction for those who may not know you. And so Dr. Will Tuttle, he's really, I would say, a visionary author. And he is, well, he's visionary in many ways because he has the power of discernment. And I think that's a lot of the reason why some people are gullible. They're not seeing clearly. He is the best-selling author of a book called The World Peace Diet. It's been published in 18 languages, and he's well decorated. He's the recipient of the Courage of Conscience Award and the Empty Cages Prize. I shared with you the Food for Freedom book, Reclaiming Our Health and Rescuing Our World. He's actually a musician. His wife is an artist. In this book, she's got a lot of inspiration for really yummy meals. And he is also the author of Your Inner Islands, all about developing intuition. And he is an author of other books, or an editor of a book called Circles of Compassion. You know what, friends? I'm going to leave a link for you to his website, willtuttle.com, so you can read about all of the things that he's done and all of the contributions that he has made to living a more compassionate, healthy, thoughtful life. And he has been a vegan since 1980. He's a frequent radio, television, and online presenter. He has several wellness and advocacy training programs. It goes on and on. Author of many books. He's got many websites, but the best place to find him is willtuttle.com. So thank you, Dr. Will, for coming on board. We're going to talk about how we got in this mess in the first place over the last few years, and how we can get out of it. You cover so much of that in your book.
Right. Well, I think it's important to realize that we can get out of it. And the main message really in both World Peace Diet, but especially in this book, which was really inspired, like you say, by the problems that we've been having the last 4 or 5 years with COVID and everything else, is basically that when we steal the freedom and sovereignty and well-being and so forth of literally billions of other beings, we shouldn't be surprised when we find that happening to us. It's an ancient spiritual teaching. As you sow, so shall you reap. God is not mocked. And so it's really, that's kind of the underlying idea, is that we're all born into a culture where from the time we're little kids, we're just participating in rituals, mealtime rituals, where animals are force medicated against their will, again, by the millions, and they're dominated and exploited. And we don't really see it. It's not that we're bad, evil people wanting to harm other beings. We just see them as livestock. We reduce them. We're raised in a society, so we're kind of put into a somewhat of a hypnotic trance by the whole thing, by very well-meaning people, our parents and teachers and friends and neighbors and relatives and doctors and ministers and everybody. They're all engaging in the same behavior. But it does, when you look deeply into it, it creates a foundation where we don't really want to look too deeply into our food. And our food is our most intimate connection with nature and with our society. You don't get more intimate than actually eating something. That's very powerful. And so since we're raised from the time of little kids to just not look deeply at what really went into making the bacon and the sausage and the cheese and all these things, we basically learn to kind of stay shallow as a society and not look deeply, not really feel and care deeply when it comes to food. And then we see these animals, especially cows and pigs and chickens, as mere matter. You know, we buy and sell them by the pound as if they're just sacks of cement. And so that not only causes tremendous suffering to them, it always boomerangs back to us, and we begin to see ourselves as mere matter. And this society we're born into is the most materialistic society in the history of the world, in the sense that we're taught in school that there was a big bang and everything just sort of happened. There's no meaning. Everything is random. I mean, this idea that we're just random products, that comes out of a society of animal agriculture, 10,000 years of wounding, just getting stronger and stronger and stronger and more disconnected from the spiritual truth of being, which is that what we are is consciousness, awareness, eternal. And when we finally see a cow or a pig or a chicken as a being, then we don't just see them as a piece of meat to be used. Then that's a transformation, I think, that can help us in this whole thing. Because the problem is, I think a lot of people want to have health and freedom for ourselves, but we think, well, but I want to take away the health and freedom of these other beings because I'm superior and they're inferior. Well, doesn't that kind of resonate with something that's happening to us by the plutocrats who look at us as livestock in many ways? So the idea is, if we don't want to be looked at as livestock, we should stop looking at other beings as livestock and respect them. So it's not blaming anyone, criticizing anyone. It's just understanding that we've all been subjected to a massive psyop, really, a deception that we're going to die if we don't eat protein from an animal, or our teeth are going to fall out if we don't have calcium from a cow. I mean, here I am, you know, 44 years with no meat, dairy, or eggs, and I'm not dying. And I'm just one of millions. There's millions, billions probably. Well, not billions, but millions of people like me who don't eat animal foods and do fine. So again, I'm not trying to push any agenda. It's just to simply understand what is actually going on. And it's hard to see it because food is our most intimate connection with our families and friends and neighbors. And so to question that, it's difficult because we think, well, what am I going to do when everybody gets together for Thanksgiving and Christmas, or the boss has a meal and I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to tell him I don't eat his food or or her food, whatever it is. So it's a very challenging to actually question these things. But that's what I love about your whole approach, Peggy. You just like, you go straight ahead. And I think that is a very beautiful thing, because to be able to just go straight ahead and let the chips fall and just try to find what the truth actually is, even if it goes against what I really find most delicious or how I fit into society. We all want to comply. We want to get along. We want to be like everybody else. And what we found is that has been the big problem, that we're willing to comply and put our standing and our in-group above our own integrity, our own spiritual life, our spiritual path, which is the most important thing. If we don't have that, we don't have anything. So this is the problem, and it's been coming, it's been building slowly for decades. I would say really for centuries, but especially the last, it's just accelerating. And as technology accelerates, the net gets tighter. So it's critical that we just question science and technology, that we think that they're gonna help us. Nothing's going to help us except spirituality, spiritual growth. That is the key. We don't think science is going to help us get out of this. We have to get out of it through our own awakening. So again, I want to thank you so much, Peggy, for constantly encouraging people to question the official narratives and that promote violence and domination of the weak by the strong. That's really what we're talking about. And then following that to its logical conclusion in many ways.
Well, I think that's the root message in your book is this domination of the strong over the weak. And we see it in so many areas. You're focusing in the food industry. We see it in big agriculture. We see it in, you know, big chem with all of the chemical, the toxins that I read in your book were exposed to 80,000 or tens of thousands of synthetic chemicals that mm-hmm. we're bombarded with. And then it's no surprise that people are becoming ill. They experience conditions and symptoms. And then big pharma takes that and manipulates it and calls it a disease and then wants to sell you the cure for a condition that they created. You talk about in your book, the also the big banks that are a part of that, big medicine, all of the government agencies, the indoctrination that we get in the schools, the media that's really promoted by the government as well. And it all is that you are weak. You are dependent on us. We have mm-hmm. the answers. And the other thing you mentioned, which was really powerful, they want to keep, you know, the powers that shouldn't be, want to keep us divided, the divide and conquer yeah. rule. So we argue about things that aren't really the hill to die on, to keep us divided and to keep us dependent on these so-called experts that we can't question. You've seen it in the food industry, and now we're seeing that play out with the hogwash, as I call it, the cooties.
Well, you know, what you're saying is so important. And just on the practical level, if you just go back about 120 years or so to Rockefeller, you know, just this enormous wealth that was accumulated, and then how he was able essentially to change his persona to being a philanthropist. And this predatory philanthropy, which is really, I've seen it for the last 30, 40 years in the animal rights movement, in the women's movement, in environmental movement, in churches, everywhere. Whenever you give money, then you have power and control. And so it's fascinating just to see how petroleum not only concentrates wealth in a few hands, but Rockefeller and then the foundation and others have gone and, you know, continued that same model, to refine petroleum into chemicals. So now you have petrochemicals. So you make much more money with petrochemicals than you do with petroleum. And so this whole laying out of millions and millions of pounds of chemicals, toxic chemicals, pesticide, herbicides, fungicides, all these things, and chemical fertilizers. So creating a whole agriculture and calling it the Green Revolution from the 1950s and 60s, they called it the Green Revolution. And it was basically changing the foundation of agriculture from soil to oil. And that created a massive wave of sickness. And as people were eating all these, you know, chemicals, and we're getting more now than ever, glyphosate is a broad spectrum antibiotic. It's carcinogenic. It's all kinds of problems we have. Paraquat, which is causing Alzheimer's disease, and these other hormone disrupting chemicals that are causing kids to not know what gender they are. I mean, all these things. And then you further refine petrochemicals to pharmaceuticals. It's still petroleum. It's pharmaceuticals. And then the profits that are generated from this are so massive that they're reinvested into controlling the narrative. That's the key. That's the goal of everything, is to control the narrative. So the thing is that wealth translates directly into power, because wealth translates into narrative control. My father owned a whole chain of newspapers, and so I understand this in my bones. I remember sitting around the table, and my father would be talking to my mother and say, well, you know, we can't run that article about that company because, you know, they're advertisers. We don't want to lose the advertising. So I know, but I realize most people don't know. I know in my bones, don't trust the media, because I was raised in it. And I know that when I read a newspaper or listen to the television, I'm getting the view of advertisers. And who are the biggest advertisers? The food industry, fast food especially, chemical industry, pharmaceutical industry, the bankers, you know, petroleum. And so they want basically people to maximize chronic disease. That's where the big money is. And as you know, we've talked about this, I'm sure, but back when I was a kid, we had very few of these jabs. And there was, you know, maybe 5 or 6, or maybe at the most 10% of people had chronic disease. And now it's up to close to 70% have some kind of chronic illness. So this is weakening the population. And when you have people who are sick and don't have a lot of energy and have brain fog, you have people that are easily controlled. The last thing, you know, the last thing they want is people that are healthy, vigorous, alert, aware, communicating, looking at things or researching, you know, all of that. And so my PhD actually from UC Berkeley is in education, and you have the same similar interests. You know, you've really been into education. And I think that's the other thing, is that Rockefeller early on got into education, got into educating the whole educational system, especially medical, education of doctors. And the Flexner Report back in the 1910s, which basically just eliminated homeopathy and everything else, and just said, all you can do is pharmaceutical medicine, that's science-based. And so we have been brainwashed and programmed on such a massive scale to materialist medicine, fear-based, very fear-based, yes. Germ theory-oriented.
Yes.
And one thing I just want to mention, maybe it's going a little deep, but I think I just want to mention this, which is that the thing with the reason I think that germ theory is so attractive to us is that it makes us into an innocent victim. Mm. You know, we're good people. We like a good steak. We do this, we do that, but then we get attacked just out of the blue by these germs, these viruses, these things, you don't know where they are. There are all these evil enemies that are out there, you know, and if we're healthy and we have a basic sense of kinship and connection with the natural world, with God's divine creation or all around us, we're in it, that doesn't resonate really. It's like, I'm not a victim.
I love that.
When we're disconnected, see, the thing with what animal agriculture does, unfortunately, is it's like we are committing such a massive onslaught of violence towards these animals and ecosystems. We're cutting down rainforests now at about 4 acres per second to grow genetically engineered soybeans to feed the cows and pigs and chickens and factory farm fish. We're just destroying rainforests and habitat and oceans and all this to overproduce food. We don't need to. We could dramatically reduce our environmental footprint if we ate just plant-based foods, especially organic. So we're in this war basically against wildlife, against nature. Farmers are always trying to kill off all the wolves and prairie dogs and foxes and all these animals because they interfere with their property. And so that war against nature, then nature is no longer our friend, our the source of our life. Now nature is something we have to dominate and exploit. And so we have a whole science that comes out of animal agriculture, which is to protect and control and dominate nature, the natural world. And so so this is what we're born into. We're eating this. This is in our educational system. It's in everything. And so naturally, we feel the germ theory, you know, we feel this sympathy with the germ theory, which says that there's invisible killers and they're all around us. And, you know, we don't know where they are. They're lurking somewhere.
They're coming out of our breath.
Yeah, exactly. All of that. Like we're going to make each other sick, you know?
Yeah. This breathing now harmful. You have a... Friends, you've got to read this book and you've got to read the chapter, which is metaphysics of masks. I think I'm going to do another video about this in particular, because you summarize in great detail all of the harms. And that's part of it. Fearing another being, right? That we are breathing God's breath, right? That is spirit, inspiration, breathing it in. Now that's harmful. All of these twisted narratives that they're trying to control. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but that's what we can point to an invisible boogeyman instead of being responsible for our own choices. Talk about living in fear.
Well, see, the thing is that's true. But the other little point the final thing I wanted to say about that was that when I go to the store or to the restaurant and I take out my wallet and I pay for a steak or for cheese or something, I actually myself am the invisible killer of that poor cow or chicken or whatever. Somewhere, because of my purchase, an animal is being abused and killed, but I don't want to think about that. You know, so, but we know it at a deep level. At a deep level, we are intuitive, and I think we are compassionate, and we do have a feeling for what's actually happening. So we create this whole reality where we say, well, you know, there's these invisible killers out there, because that's what we are. I studied, you know, not only the religious teachings, which really emphasize this in Christianity, and actually I was studied a lot of other religions too. And I think underlying everything is the idea that for us to create a world of harmony and peace, it flows out of our thoughts, words, and deeds, our actions. And so if we're sowing seeds of being invisible killers, of being the one you, no one knows, that animal doesn't know, but because of me, I'm killing, then we sow a seed that's going to bear fruit. When you plant a carrot, you don't get broccoli, you get carrots. So we sow those seeds by the millions every day, and we find we have millions of people who are afraid of invisible killers, and we just buy into that narrative. And so the thing is, the pharmaceutical industry and the sort of pharmaceutical medical complex, this whole thing, and the bankers in the background that are making all the money on this whole thing, they're not only predatory, but they're parasitic. They're like parasites. They just feed on our fear and our ignorance and our violence. See, the thing is, we are committing a lot of violence towards ecosystems and animals, and really each other, but which we don't want to take responsibility for. So, and the animals can never retaliate, they just take it, but our violence towards them retaliates. It comes back as either heart disease, liver disease, kidney disease, cancer, or as people that are doing the same thing to us. And we don't want it to happen to us. So that's a healthy thing. We don't want it to happen to us. That's healthy. So I think the path forward is the spiritual path of discernment, like you're always emphasizing, to really make an effort. And it's not only inner work, it's also teamwork. Like, we support each other as a team, like help each other, but also to, as much as we can, to liberate those who we may be unknowingly imprisoning and harming, to do our best to be sensitive to that. Then we're sowing seeds of kindness and caring, because people say, oh yeah, I'm very loving, I'm very forgiving. And yeah, but how are you actually living? Yeah, that's the question. And I think the spiritual traditions of the world call us to be congruent, that our actions and words are congruent. If they're not, we're going to have this cognitive dissonance and all these other kinds of dissonances in our society. And we're seeing that just exploding now with, like you say, with divisiveness and all these other issues that we're having.
Yeah, it's like a double-edged sword. The powers that shouldn't be, they preyed upon that innate desire to help and be compassionate and caring, and they twisted it around to make these evil practices appear benevolent and, you know, restricting our breathing, covering, you know, dehumanizing the individual with, you know, these, I call them suffocation devices, so that people then, when they were in these disguises, and I think everybody experienced that, literally being, you weren't exactly face to face since their face was covered, but you described that in the book as well, where people could behave in a way that they never would if they actually had their face exposed. So the bad guys took what a compassionate, caring person might normally do, like, oh, I don't want to harm anyone by breathing on them, but then turned it around, and it actually, that was the diabolical evil of it all as well. So they have a way of twisting that. And then people that grew up not questioning authority because of their woundedness, their trauma, these descriptions that you're providing us in terms of, you know, the food industry and how we were inculcated into that, indoctrinated into that, and then never questioning authority. So there might be laziness on the parts of some individuals. There just may be fear that they don't want to be different than anyone else. That probably goes along a lot with not wanting to make these choices that are going to be different than what society approves of. But there's something I need to have you touch on, Dr. Will, that is so interesting about the plant-based movement. Now, you've been a vegan for 44 years, You and your wife have so much great information. And anyone who is interested, I know not all of my viewers are at that phase. And you are, again, so compassionate and caring with the way you present your information. But what's, I think, so compelling are those who have hijacked the vegan movement into this plant-based narrative of creating these frankenfoods that aren't necessarily healthy. Tell us what's wrong with these plant-based food industry.
That's a really great question. Before I say that, I just want to go back just briefly to what you said earlier about obeying authority, just to emphasize that also to see that we're raised in an educational system that you get rewarded for obeying authority. And the more you obey authority, the better your grades. And that's one of the reasons I think when people go farther and farther in the educational system, they become more and more addicted to just obeying authority. And then they become the authorities themselves. And so they get rewarded. And so many doctors and other highly educated, you think they would have known better. And they just went along with it, partly because they get paid for it, or they kept their status. But our intelligence gets so shut down by that. It's really a disaster. But then the other point about, that's a big discussion too. These are all big discussions. But basically, the vegan movement or the animal liberation movement, whatever you like to call it, has been infiltrated, like I think all the movements have, by predatory philanthropy. And I've seen it, like there would be various things. Like at one point, the Open Philanthropy Project actually donated $1 million to some of these groups that were like, they would say, don't buy eggs because that's cruel to chickens. And then they said, we'll give you $1 million to change your message to don't buy eggs from battery cages, buy cage-free eggs. And so they said, okay, we'll change our mind. They got to give us $1 million. So it just kind of diluted the movement to say, well, it'd be much better to buy cage-free eggs, for example. These kinds of things have been happening. But the other thing, what you're talking about also, which is to give money to create these frankenfoods, these foods that come out of these factories, they're even talking about lab-grown meat, which to me is like most horrific. It's like a pharmaceutical nightmare of stuff. You would never want to eat that. But even a lot of the so-called they call them vegan foods that are fake meat and cheese and eggs and so forth, they're very often very unhealthy. I mean, they're made very often with genetically engineered components, or they're not organically grown, and they have a lot of chemicals and preservatives and other stuff in them. And so people, like are looking at vegans like they're very unhealthy people eating these weird foods. And that's the opposite. I mean, when I became a vegan back in 1980, all you could eat was vegetables, fruits, nuts, grains, and seeds, because that was it. And it was great. We were healthy, whole, organic, plant-based foods. And that was very threatening. I think it's one of the most threatening things to the power, like you say, the powers that shouldn't be, is healthy people who realize that we don't have to cause violence, and we can feed everybody in a fraction of the land. We can really undercut this whole violence towards animals and ecosystems and other people, and really create a world of caring and health based on reducing our environmental footprint and just sort of naturally. And so there was a big push to try to either to make vegans the enemy, and that's been happening. So and a lot of vegans, unfortunately, have not done the inner work. The problem with a lot of vegans is they're anti-religion, because maybe they went to church, and then they saw the church has a fish fry and a barbecue. Heck, they're all a bunch of bad people, and so they become anti-religion, and they become even anti-spiritual. They become very materialistic. Unfortunately, a lot of vegans just throw everything out, and so then what do? They worship science, science. Mm-hmm. And science has been completely, as co-opted. And so these poor people, unfortunately, a lot of them are very lost in delusion. Unfortunately, not a criticism. It's just that's what's happened. They buy into, they'll do whatever the doctors say, and even like the Vegan Society of London, for example, told everybody that they really should get vaccinated. You should do, I mean, first of all, vaccines
Wow.
are not vegan. I mean, every so-called vaccine has animal input. I mean, they all do. They have camel cell lines or chicken or pig or cow or horse or dog or monkey or something. They all have animal inputs. The basic things, these sort of mRNA ones don't have that. They're different. They don't even, we shouldn't even call them that. They're something else. They're
Yeah.
not. But anyway, but they're all tested on animals, and they all have other things that come from animals, like squalene, which comes from sharks, and poor horseshoe crab blood, and all this stuff. I mean, it's just completely unconscionable from my point of view to be promoting something that's the opposite of really what you're talking about. But then all these unhealthy foods, and so people say, well, I tried being a vegan. I was eating all that vegan food, and boy, after 6 months, I was so sick. I'm not vegan anymore. I feel much better now. That's what they want. They want people to think that veganism is eating processed junk food, and that's the opposite of it. I mean, we should be naturally allied with the environmental movement, the freedom movement. It's all the same movement. It's people who care. It's like caring about ourselves and our loved ones and our families and our environment and animals and our earth and. It's based on that divine feminine power of caring, which is the foundation of a healthy society. And so these predatory philanthropists, I mean, and also the plutocrats, it's the same people. I have to say, they're savvy. They know how to not only control the narrative on their side, but also to try to start controlling the oppositional narratives and getting people fighting with each other.
That's
And
right.
so for me, just being a health freedom advocate, a lot of the veg fest, for example, I'm not allowed to speak. They say, I'm like not allowed. You spread vaccine misinformation, you're not allowed here. So
Wow.
I was, I was always the most welcome anywhere, everywhere, and all the whole entire vegan movement, all over the world. I mean, I could go any kind of, we've been to China, India, all over the world, 50 countries. And I saw it happen. I stood up for health freedom, and all of a sudden it was like, I posted something I remember on Facebook, like we should all get together and not believe this whole thing about contagion and all this
Yeah.
baloney. And oh man, I was just totally attacked by the vegan movement.
Isn't that amazing? I
Yeah, I
found
know.
that I found oh, I've been an animal rescue for many years, most of my life, animal advocacy and humane education and so forth. I found the same thing and I was shocked because I thought these were the very individuals that could see the oppression and the tyranny that they had experienced with these county run slaughterhouses known as animal shelters. And I thought certainly they would not fall for the shenanigans and these narratives of the government. I had no idea that was happening in the food freedom and vegan world as well. That is astounding. What I was compelled, what was so compelling in your book about these plant-based plants, there this food is being created in plants and being infused, as you say. It's not necessarily organic or non-GMO. It might be, it likely contains these flavors and additives that will continue to keep you sick, and you pay more for it. And it still is a stress and strain on resources. And why not just grow some carrots and beans, as you say? As a matter of fact, if people are interested, you've got to go. I will share the website. You're going to go to willtuttle.com. And in this book, his wife has, well, you've included a shopping list of the kinds of foods that you eat, grains and veggies, proteins, including peas and beans, other legumes, herbs and spices, fruits, flax seeds, almonds, walnuts, tomato sauce. These are like normal, natural foods. These are not created in a laboratory with probably some petroleum products. And it's that, remember that Beyond Meat was being promoted a couple of years ago, and every restaurant was carrying it, all the
Impossible burgers and
impossible things. I don't even think it went anywhere because I don't think anybody liked that at all. But that is part of the deception. And as we wrap up, I want to circle back to your introductory remarks in the book. And you speak very persuasively about this concept of gullibility, right? So Tell us again, what is gullibility and why is it so destructive? It's not a passive state.
Right. Well, what I've realized, you know, every religion and every society, there are certain primary commandments, like don't kill, don't steal, don't commit sexual misconduct. And the other big one is don't lie, you know, don't deceive. And the interesting thing is that with these other ones, if someone, you know, harms us, usually we know we've been harmed. But with deception, we can be harmed and we have no idea it happened. You don't even know. They can be deceiving us and taking things from us and disempowering us, just and we don't know. So deception of all violence is the most dangerous and damaging and long lasting. It can go on even from generation to generation. And so what we have to understand is an old saying, you cannot fool an honest man or an honest person. And I think there's a lot of deep wisdom in that. When we're really honest and authentic, we're not easily fooled because we're not trying to fool others. And we can see through charades and scams pretty easily. But we're raised in a society where we're all in many ways manipulating each other and kind of fooling each other, because that's part of what our system is based on. It's like we have a resume, we're trying to give a good impression, we're just and we work our way up the ladders, and so there's so much deception going on that we're engaging in that we tend to find ourselves easily fooled in our society. We tend to be, which is a word for that is gullible. We tend to be gullible. We just
fall for it. Yeah.
and we think if we figure it out later, man, that guy fooled me. We think that we're a victim. Like, oh, that just, you know, he was the bad guy, not me. I'm okay. It was his fault. He shouldn't have fooled me. And really, I don't think so. I mean, if we're really honest, we're not that easily fooled. There's some kind of a payoff. Maybe it's subconscious, but it's because we don't really want to know. And so we are called, and the thing, of course, that now we see happening is that something I coined this term, toxic gullibility, which I think is, it becomes toxic because it can reinforce gullibility. It does reinforce gullibility in others. You know, if someone believes and watches TV and goes, oh my gosh, there's a pandemic, I better wear a mask. And so then, you know, pretty soon everybody's wearing masks. And, Madeline and I would always be the only ones in the store not wearing a mask. And it was daunting in a way. They're all looking at us like, you know, what's wrong with you? Because there's this reinforcement. And so gullibility, as it builds on itself, it destroys the natural immune system that a society has to fend off deception. I mean, deception destroys relationships. It'll destroy a society. It'll enslave people. Deception will enslave people. And so gullibility, when it feeds on itself and grows and becomes toxic and people start enforcing their own gullibility on others, then the deceptive force, there's nothing to stop it. There's no social immune system anymore to create a healthy society. So like what you call a healthy American, it's like what you're saying is a healthy immune system for our culture, which is to have discernment, to not fall for deception, to be honest, authentic ourselves. And that's a big challenge in our society. It really requires us, I think, to have an inner practice. Like I spend 2 or 3 hours every morning, I don't do anything, I'm just in silence and connecting with my own inner consciousness and getting to know my own mind. Because I think the problem is most of us, we have this beautiful instrument, a mind, and we're not taught really how to use it properly. It's like getting a beautiful grand piano, I play the piano, and our parents and everybody around us teaches us how to play, and they teach us to bang on the keys and pour coke into the action. That's how most people use their mind in our society. You know, we're getting drunk, we're yelling, and you know, we don't really know how to use our mind. We're not taught that really. And so I think each one of us, we're responsible for our own consciousness. Freedom is responsibility, and that's individual responsibility. And for our mind, for the quality of our consciousness, the quality of our relationships, quality of the food, everything. And so to take responsibility for the quality of our mind, it's like you say, it's the God-given instrument that we have. and to make sure it's pure and clear
Yes.
and connected to the deeper wellsprings of wisdom beyond just, rationality is great, but it's something even deeper, an inner knowing that we can cultivate. And when we do that and combine that with the critical thinking capacities, then we have real discernment. And I think that's up to each one of us to do that work.
Well, I like how you describe that, Dr. Will. And I think what happens is people don't spend time without any outside inputs. So they're always on their phone or on social media, listening to a podcast, reading a book, watching TV. There's some kind of engagement in the mind, right? Entertainment means to entrap the mind. And even in the Christian tradition is take every thought captive. So what am I thinking? Why am I thinking this? Guarding your heart, your place of emotions. The Bible says that's where life springs from. And so I remember even prior to all this hogwash, I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to take a break from like reading books because I really do love to read and I really like, nonfiction. I don't read novels and all that. I like to learn, I like to grow. And I thought, I want to, I'm bombarding myself with other people's thoughts. I want to know my own thoughts. I want to spend more time thinking and learning and discerning. And that requires silence, meaning maybe you're on a walk. I mean, people do it differently. I like to walk and swim and so forth, but I'm not listening to a podcast. I always recommend people on this channel to not pay attention to the headlines, to, walk that line of being informed, but not obsessed. So what you're describing, I think, is so important that people take a break from all of the noise of what's going on in their life. And I've got to tie back to that gullibility for a moment because friends that are listening, gullibility, meaning easily swayed, you're not going to dig deeper, you're going to take what people say. It's not a passive ignorance. It's an active harm to our society. I did a whole video on that based on the introduction in this book. And it was so eye-opening because I think I even dismissed a few people like, well, they didn't really know. No, I knew they could know. And certainly by now they know. And I do welcome everyone on board. I mean, if you're just waking up, hop on board. This is the place to be. But let's take responsibility for our actions. Many people said, I had to do it. I had to get the shot to keep my job. I had to put on the device to go on a plane to visit my grandchildren. Well, you chose to do that. Now, there's a consequence for not doing it, but you did. Because when we give our power away by saying, I didn't have a choice, we're right back to what you've been talking about in your book. We're participating in the oppression and the tyranny by giving in, giving up, and giving over our freedom. So, what do you have to say for us as we wrap up? Food for freedom, great place to start. I'm going to do a separate video. I want to talk about your chapter on masks because it's kind of PTSD a little bit. But that's the other thing. Let's stand in confidence. We don't need to be afraid of the fear mongers, or I call them the flu mongers, and they're going to trot that out again. We're not over. We're not through it.
That's right.
But more people have stood up. We're connected. We're more educated and informed as to what's going on. And the number one tool that they're using is fear. And you explain in your book why we're prone to that. And then you gave us this idea. You shared your practice of spending time in silence and really not being a part of what's going on in the world. What are a couple other actions we can take in our daily lives to stand in freedom?
Well, I think you've really summed it up really well. The main thing I think is that not only the silence, but also understanding that what we are is not just this body. We are what makes this body possible. We're far greater. That's the source. As long as I think I'm just this body, I'm going to be afraid. Oh my gosh. Once we understand, no, we're far greater than that. They don't have any power. They don't have any power. So we have to do that. And then like this idea just came to me today of teamwork, like working together to help raise awareness. When we do that, Any way we can do, any way we can share, like your message, share the Healthy American with other people, share positive, clear expressions of the truth to others, because it really, that's the positive contagion. That's a because we are telepathic, but we also communicate, and so the more we can spread loving kindness and awareness and fearlessness and joy and freedom and abundance and so forth, which are our true nature, the more that gets root, and this other stuff won't be able to take
I love that message. That's yeah. Also in the Christian faith, which is, you know, focus on what is good and true and pure and positive. Yeah. And friends, evil wins when you are despairing, and you know, these emotions are valid. They're human experiences that we go through, but not getting stuck in them, finding ways that you can share the joy, the love, the truth. And here, I want to share your website as we close out. So here's where to go, everyone. If you are interested in learning more about Dr. Will, you can listen to his music, his wife's art. There's the World Peace Diet. This is really a jumping off point for his other websites and teachings. So I want to thank you so much, Dr. Will, for being on board. We bring different perspectives. That's how we learn and grow. And I really appreciate you sharing yours. Thank you for writing the book. Thank you for reminding us of so many of these elements that we may have overlooked over these last few years of the collective trauma that we've experienced. And we're going to come out of it stronger than ever.
Definitely. Thank you, Peggy. And thank you, everyone. Thanks.
Okay. Hope to see you again, Dr. Will. Take care.